Peter Hill Explains, where I invite you to join the science teaching conversation with me about more cat and animal stories. As I talk about animals, like people give animal stories back to me, and I thought, oh, it might be interesting to talk about. Now, of course, this is the Bargain Basement podcast, the worst podcast you could possibly get. So it's actually called A Voice Memo. That's where I speak and publish sort of the worst end of it. I suppose is it contempt for audiences? I'm not so sure, but other people get the best quality equipment, which I just get the best low-cost quality equipment, and then if something's a bit buggered, I try and work it out a bit more. So there's a plug, the strain from this shotgun microphone to the fairly cheap Epson dictaphone, and I have to jiggle that about and make sure it's not producing heaps of static. It's an awful thing. So that's your Bargain Basement down into a few dollars, I think $2, something or other, to buy a new one. But the problem is to actually go all that distance in and buy it. And the main aim, of course, is cognitive rehab. And over the 2000, you will have heard me possibly get more coherent, more fluent. And the process is not necessarily, well, there's a bit of cognitive rehab in thinking while you speak. The other part is planning ahead, just sort of having a little bit of a plan and go ahead. So this one, I'm going to cover a series of animals. Firstly, cats, and then I'll go on to caterpillars. And the cat one is, I think you can judge for yourself, hearing people's cat stories, which is, you know, which is best. And I have my, I suppose, one of my own cat stories, and then a story from he was an army sergeant, but he was also a police sergeant. He's sort of one of these part-time warriors that we have in Australia. This is just ordinary people leave their jobs and dress up in army uniform and sort of inflate the numbers of the Australian army by a factor of two. So we've got sort of an army the size of Luxembourg or something like that. Something along those, a very small professional army. And then we've got a sort of a hobbyist army at the back. And this is from the hobbyist army. So let's go to this story, and I'm going to make up the name Protect the Innocent. This person, let's call her Sue, told the story of her ginger cat story. I'll tell her, and I obviously can't tell it as well as she's written it, but in the wilds of desert Australia, they had a cat which didn't like to go inside because they had a Labrador dog, so it decided that it was going to spend its life, entire life, in the garage. So they used to go out to the garage, open the door, put some cat food in, and the cat were there, sort of not, doesn't sound the most spectacular, the most advanced, acrobatic, sort of amazing cat. It was just a cat's cat. And it would just be there and do what cats normally do, just actually be furry and meow and look odd and uncomfortable at various situations, and we project our emotions onto it, that type of stuff. But it had a problem that it had a visiting red cat, a ginger cat, which would come in and basically hoover, no matter how much food they put down, hoover it all up and scat. And this was a thing, you know, what was the origin of this ginger cat? There was, it was all solved when a ad was dropped in there. Letterbox, please, we've lost our ginger cat. You know, this is awful, we've lost it. And so a series of times to coax the cat and to hold the cat, and it didn't work. So eventually they closed the door, and the cat was inside the garage, and then she phoned the number, and then the phones didn't work, so she drove over. I can't imagine how far it would be, but drove over and said, oh, look, we've got your cat. And there were two daughters in the background, and they said, I said, oh, I can't go to get this cat.
Wait. And then, of course, the daughter's pleaded, please, Dad, go now. So within a quarter of an hour, he got his typical Aussie sort of blue singlet, thongs, shorts, that type of stuff. You can imagine, we'd sort of equate that with working class or relaxed, but I often look even worse than that. No, but he drove out, she looked up, and in this wardrobe there was the ginger cat sitting up there, and she went up to get it out, and it scratched her hand. So she got the owner over, and he said, look, I think it's our cat. Yes daddy, that's our cat. And then he walked over, and the cat sprung out and scratched him on the face and all this type of stuff. And after a while, the cat just destroying him and running out the door, I don't think it's our cat. And went along. And so it was, I suppose, the moral of the story is someone who, I suppose, sees an individual cat, an individual problem, connects the two together, and transports a problem in their head, a solution in their head, into someone else's problem. And they get scratched by it. So that's the story of the ginger cat, which disappeared. And so how could you properly trump that story? Well, the story transports. This is my story, transports. There's two stories which I think trump. I don't know the correct word for that, trumpet. One is the first one of me going as a youth in Australia. We had a series of paddocks and a creek with absolutely full of snakes and Australian water rats. Pretty amazing. These sort of marsupials which would swim across the water, beautiful coats, you know, right in the centre of Melbourne, you know, in Kew, sort of 10 kilometres from the very centre of Melbourne. Centre spire or the MCG, whatever you call the heart of Melbourne, or Collins Street or Bourke Street. Only a short distance. You could walk to Melbourne in an hour and a half, 2 hours, around that amount of time, if you wanted to. And occasionally I had to. You know, the buses would go off, or it'd be too late at night, and you just walk home. So that's the type of distance. But it's a little bit earlier in my life, and there's two doors, one, two, three doors. Yes, three doors. And we had the man check. We had the sunbather, the maid check one, and the cat girl. So this girl with very long hair, absolutely adored cats. Spent, you know, that type of time where they go cuckoo, cats, and the cats come up to her and all that type of stuff. And I was out throwing boomerangs. Yep. So that's what I used to do. I was the sort of autistic sport an autistic person does is, you know, other people, let's go out and throw frisbees. If you've only got yourself, you throw boomerangs. And I sort of rather loved throwing boomerangs, partly because mine were not that aerodynamic, and so were not, what can you say, they were more caught by the wind and thermals and that type of stuff. But there were certain times of the day where it was beautiful to throw your boomerang, and in the evening I loved throwing my boomerang because it would go out and the sun's rays would catch it and it would be dark in the background and you'd see this beautiful thing go around, and it would come around and then it would, like a bird, hover, and you would snap it between your fingers and stuff like that. So going out there, and in the middle of this paddock, which is now in beautiful parkland, it used to have horses in it, which is sort of terrifying because they would put these, not necessarily, they're not aggressive horses, but these would be horses which would be a bit aging, so they wouldn't see you, and so you'd be just there slightly as a kid with your hockey stick and stuff like that, boomerang and stuff like that. This horse would walk up to you and then put its flank against you because it wanted to be ridden, but it would not be enough to, yeah, all these types of things to know what's going on. So that was there. So in the middle of this field was this kitten, obviously lost, and there was the cat lover, this kitten, and I couldn't walk away from this kitten. I picked it up, I took it along. I said, well, what am I going to do? Took it home, fed it some milk. It's all okay. It was a bit sort of, this is before I learned about how dangerous cats could be. And then I said, oh, well, I can't look after it. I know what I'll do. I'll take it down to, and I'd never spoken to this because I was, I don't know, 13 and she was 16 or something like that. So sort of this huge age gap, you know, where they're, you know, that much more old and sophisticated. I sort of said, oh, here's this kitten. Will you look after this kitten? And it was a lost kitten. I explained it was a lost kitten. And it would have surely not survived in the wilderness out in the back, on the back paddock. And, you know, gee, oh, not that I want to know you anymore, but oh, I didn't know you were that type of person, all that type of stuff. Bit of a sort of first start of a conversation came up, and a bit of awkward pause, and I went away. And it was, so I was suddenly a nobody, and I had sort of gone up to the ranks of a kitten, a cat saver. And that was all okay until 2 days later. There was a notice in our everybody's letterbox of a, back then you didn't have colour photographs, you had a black and white photocopy of a photo, and of our ginger cat, most dearly beloved. We'd only had it a couple of days and we lost it, and we were distraught and we lost it. And of course I didn't say anything, and she would have received it and returned it. That was just this awful. So there's a sort of similar theme, but problem of, you've got your worldview, you see the cat in it, and you see the problem, and you tend to immediately solve it and you produce it. It's only how embarrassing can it get, and to get through. So these are two stories where, if you're listening from the outside and you really don't care about cats and you don't care about people or the inner worlds of people and stuff like that, it doesn't make a lot of sense. Or not sense, it's surely there's got to be a more graphic cat story, and this has got to come up now. And that's an army buddy of mine doing sergeant's courses. So let's try and get up really so to get into the SAS and to get into the you know, the regiments, you have to be very keen. You have to be absolutely top elite and stuff like that. Okay, so if you're not like that and you're just a uni student, you can rock up to reserve recruiting and become a reserve, you know, foot soldier. And there are some people who are living their TV fantasy and they don't last very long. Because it's a bit boring, and also a bit of hard work and study, and the pay at that stage was absolutely awful. But it was a time when there was a lot of ammunition, and you know, lots of, you had actually quite a lot of fun doing it. I'm just going building this story up to, you know, who what a sergeant is and all that type of stuff. And so you went through a series of courses, recruit course, initial employment training, and then you went through several corporal courses, and after, you would do subject one for corporal, subject two for corporal, and then after you did the courses, you'd have to get your qualification validated by actually performing efficiently in that duty in your unit. Like you could, yeah. Oh, yeah. Like you, but when you did efficiency and there was a vacancy, you would become a full corporal or something like that. And so, similarly, like if you did the sergeant's courses and there was a position and they hadn't paperwork, you'd become a provisional sergeant. So that was, especially if you did, there was a sergeant duty on a camp, but not in the regiment. So if an operation, so there would be operations, but there wouldn't be sort of like massive operations like with a foreign force or something like that. It would be planning to run through an operation with these reserve people. And so there would be, in these courses, you'd be, say, a signal sergeant, intelligence, in that type of stuff. So in this case, you would be thrown in for general sergeant training with all walks of life. Well, not really all walks of life. But the sergeant training I did was with a person who was a police sergeant. He was a police sergeant and stuff like that. And he worked in Mount Druitt, which was back then, still is not as much notorious for social housing, drugs and, cars and burnouts and police activity and this type of stuff. And he was in his cop car and he ran over a cat. And the cat was there and it wasn't very well. And so he thought, well, what am I going to have to do? I'll have to euthanize it. And you can't, obviously, in America, you can get out guns and shoot like anything in Australia. If you take your gun out of a holster, there's sort of like an hour's paperwork with it. Well, back then it was. I think now it's even worse. And and you can't take your gun out of a holster like the Americans do because it's a big clip button. You've got to unclip it. All this type of crap. But they, in an emergency situation, the guns come out really quickly and stuff like that. So he got out his baton. I think I still have batons. And he cludgeoned this cat as he did. And this is an awful thing to do, but, you've got a cat that's not well doing like that. And he had the cat there. He wasn't going to put the cat there. And then he somehow knew to take it up to the doorstep and said to this person, and this woman came out in her nightie and stuff like that and said, "Oh, a cat." And I said, "Look, here's your cat. I found it. It's not very well. And I just thought I'd give it to you. Oh, thank you, officer. Thank you. Thank you so much." And the story finished. And then 3 weeks later, flowers came to his house, and she phoned up and she said, "Look, the cat's made a full recovery. I can't thank you enough." And so that's so it was just one of those things, which is sort of like an amazing sort of theme here of people, sort of a cat doing its cat stuff, and the humans come in at different points and make an assessment, and the cat's got its own view on it, and the humans, it's sort of like, it's like this tendon between two flows of human life. Like there's the scene, the cat problem, and the initial one with the fictitious person called Sue, that story, and the person who, for the intervention, has got dreadfully scratched by this feral cat, which is clearly not their cat. Then there's the story of, again, this cat has got caught up into someone else's life. Streams of, there's a cat problem. I've got a way of thinking of taking the cat to this girl. This girl loves cats, she's looked after it, but then the owners have got it there. And sort of similarly, the police come along, they've got to solve a cat problem, and the cat's got its own view going through on it. Now, on that, one of the things I've sent is a new advanced app to this fictitious person, and that is a cat app. And what I developed is, I've discovered a new form of mathematics which could be manipulated into an app which wrote very high speed apps, and so sort of prove it, that it could operate. Within the space of 10 minutes, I'd encounter someone. There was a block away a ginger cat. Now, occasionally ginger cats, which are all male apparently, can be very affectionate and engaging for some reason, and this cat would come out and slow my daughter's walk to school each time, because she would come out and she'd spend a whole time speaking to this cat. I spoke to the cat owner, and she told me all about the ginger ninja cat, and she gave me all the information about it. So I went back home, developed this cat, this app writing thing. I've written this computer app, and I might put a link to this computer app up in the podcast aspect of it. Now, the story I did promise is that cats, and the other thing I want to do is not cats, but caterpillars. And the only link I can have with that is that last night, as I was studying my electrodynamics book. Now, electrodynamics is this very interesting topic. You would have done it in school with electric charges and done a little bit with electric, maybe at university with mobile phones and antennas. And it's one of these subjects which requires months and months of just slow study. Because if you study it quickly, you learn basic principles, which mean that it's very hard to unlearn them to go into the next step. Because the basic principles are basic because they've made certain assumptions which have locked it down. It means that it's one of these things that's like running down a hill too fast. Yes, you can get down the hill, but you sort of run so fast that you lose control. It's one of these things. So it's one of these areas of study which you have to get into. And I don't know. It's just trying to get back and learn maths, I suppose, in a different way. That's just an aside from it. I could see this little caterpillar walking in, and there's these sort of the bony end caterpillars. There's these caterpillars called spitfires, which are supposedly supposed to spit shit at you. They've never done it with me, and I was told never to touch it and stuff. There were all these reasons. We were told not to touch spitfires. So another slightly furry caterpillar coming across, and it just walked across one tile and it stopped. The next morning I came in and it only moved just a few more caterpillars' length, so it just wasn't, it was the end of its caterpillars' days. I swept it up. Just reminded me of a few caterpillar stories. Now, one of the more amazing things is our reverse cycle air conditioner, the sort of survival chute. When the temperature becomes too hot, it shuts down, the solar cells are out, and you just get underneath your reverse cycle air conditioner, except this time the air conditioner had stopped working. And this got a caterpillar story for it, because when I was with the technician and I opened it up, and all the circuitry was full of caterpillars everywhere, and one caterpillar had committed suicide, shorting the whole thing out. So that cost a fair about $700 worth of circuits to replace. How it goes across, it was sort of dangerously close to getting a new system, but we got a new system then. And you get these very odd caterpillar stories. And so that's a story of caterpillars interfering with other people's lives and suicide and that type of stuff. And caterpillars never returned. I sort of looked at it and trying to work out how this all operates. They're not. What was amazing was that they weren't sort of like, if someone lays eggs, you get a whole lot of, say, tiny little egg spiders, the miniature spiders. These were pretty big, full-blown caterpillars. Now, how does this happen? Well, it's a big story. An insect can't lay an egg and the caterpillars can't just grow inside there, because it's sort of it's got to eat. There's nothing for the caterpillars to eat there. So there's a bit of a story time. So I'm actually looking across at this tree, which in the heat of summer one time I looked at it and it had changed colour, and it was moving. This thick tree, it was It was writhing. The entire tree was full, banded with a mass, kilograms of caterpillars. Just amazing. I was absolutely amazed by it. Then, a few days later, it had gone. And what had happened is I saw a line of the caterpillars go into the next door neighbour's house. And what they'd gone in, and then the caterpillars had gone into their pantry and eaten something, and then left again. And this was just insane, because, you know, and so this is will probably explain the caterpillars in our air conditioner, what is going on. And, you know, there's a few, you know, that's led on to even more amazing stories about that the air conditioner had found various rats and animals doing incredible things. No, like, his knowledge base was connected to the knowledge base of all air conditioner replacement people throughout Sydney and Australia. So the stories of these amazing stories would come through. I can't go into them. But the story of these caterpillars is they're called processional caterpillars. And what happens is that one caterpillar decides that it's going to go somewhere, and it invariably it goes somewhere with incredible mega knowledge, right? Sort of like, this is incredible knowledge. It's a processional. It's a processional caterpillar, and as it goes, is the caterpillar, another caterpillar, goes in and crawls just behind its tail, and the next one, the entire colony of caterpillars, well, it can't be a colony, I don't know what's going on, go, and the entire group, but you don't come around them, and they're not having a search around for food, not like ants or something like that, whether you've got scout ants going out, and these caterpillars, there is something paranormal about them. They actually go, leave a tree, and go beeline straight to a pantry. So how does it happen? How come they don't go up over a couch, down a coffee table, around here, back of the TV, and finally find the food? Or they're there, and then they're in a cabinet. Or they're in such and such. This is absolutely true. Well, there's lots of amazing, odd animals, some spooky animals, spooky insects. There's also in Sydney, there's this slime. It's not an insect. It's from before the dinosaurs. It's got. They're half blind, they're very colourful, and they've got about 20 little stub legs, and they walk around and look like a Japanese anime thing in the gardens, and they walk around and they spurt slime on insects and eat them. They said, you know, when they said to all the animals, come outside and look at this asteroid hitting us, you're not going to see that for another 100 million years. They were just, I've just got to sort my sock drawer because I've got 10. These amazing animals, and they're not insects. They're not related. They're a prehistoric animal in Sydney, and they're slime worms and stuff like that. And they go across there. So to wrap those themes up, this is, and I'm going to try and wrap it up. You've got the idea of your local area. You know, you have your cat's eating, and the bits of the puzzle come together, and you stick it together at all these times. And as you progress up and find these other situations. Me in the field seeing a cat and a woman, and it unfolds, and you get to discover it. Or seeing a cat, and you you intervene with it, and it comes, it's unfolded, and it delights. But then eventually you come to sort of a larger scale of things which transcend your time and go over a much larger time period, to these caterpillars, for instance, which have evolved over billions of years to do these incredible things. And in our universe, where we're actually just putting the problems that we see at our ground level together, there's obviously evidence that bigger things are afoot. That's my podcast on that. Thanks across again for listening. Another podcast, another story comes to a close. It's been a pleasure sharing this moment in time with you. May you discover truly amazing things, understand them, and tell others. Thanks for listening.